Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, now we can go one of two ways on this segment. Mm-hmm. You can begin with all the mysteries of the sweet potato and why you love it and what everyone should do with it. Or you can do an autumnal haiku.
I can do my poem.
Yeah.
Which is quite simply a list of some of the things I think about in food-wise in fall. Okay. So it's walnuts, pears. I can't do this without laughing.
You should, no,
it's not
you
the
should
way you're
it.
Supposed
you
to recite
it.
A poem.
I promise to not do snaps.
Okay, all right, don't
end,
do that.
Okay?
Yeah, I feel like my face might be turning red. Walnuts, pears, apples, sweet potato, peanuts, squash, pumpkin, games. I'm sorry, that would be game.
Slip a little Monopoly into supper.
And beans. And then you have, at the end of your poem, you have warm, spiced cider, which I love. That's one of my favorite things.
Well, do you have a recipe for warm spice cider?
Oh, yeah, I can do that right now. So
and
it's
then you can have
cinnamon.
The cider while you're playing Monopoly.
Right, the games. The games.
Yeah.
Cinnamon
I'm sorry,
stick,
my games are football.
Star anise, clove, fresh orange. Well, juice, and also you can put some of the peel in. Just don't let the pith be in there. And then good apple cider, and just let it simmer. So good. Or hot chocolate, but that's more wintry. So getting back to sweet potatoes. Wow. You can do so many different things with them.
Well, you can carve faces into them.
Okay, all right. So one of my favorites is Gosling's rum, brown sugar, butter, and a little bit of cinnamon, and a little bit of cream.
So is this like a mashed sweet potato?
Yeah, yeah. So
you use the whites, the yellows, the...
You can use any kind of sweet potato.
Or, okay.
Yeah, absolutely any kind of sweet potato. Just peel them, cut them in large pieces. And put them in water. And what I like to do is I actually like to put some of the spices in the water as well when I cook them. So I put a little bit of ground cinnamon in and a little bit of sugar and a little bit of salt. And actually, I put a little bit of pepper. And I put a little black pepper and cayenne pepper in. So they're going to absorb that while they're cooking.
So you put that into the boiling water.
I do.
And you put the big pieces of the sweet potato in there.
Mm-hmm. And then when they're soft, I do use a ricer. Now, you don't have to, but a ricer is a food mill. You could always just mash them in the mixer, but obviously you need to make sure they're really well cooked.
Because they get stringier than potatoes do.
Right. And do remember that with a sweet potato or any potato that you're, obviously they're absorbing liquid, that's how they cook. And if they absorb too much liquid, they're going to just not have the texture that you want them to. So the moment they're done cooking, you need to get them out of the water. And really, you should put them back in either on a sheet pan in the oven or a cookie sheet or whatever in the oven and dry them out a tiny bit, or put them back in the pot, break them up, and dry them up a little bit. But if you are
you
going
to try to cook or steam a little bit of the water that they might have absorbed.
Yeah.
From the boiling.
Extra, yeah. And then put them through the rice mill and add all those things. You know, I would add whole butter. I wouldn't add melted butter. I would actually add cream. If I was using cream, I would use it cold. Basically, what it allows it to do is emulsify in. So you're actually doing this over, like in a bowl over in a double boiler. So you would have a pot with water in the bottom of it that's warm and the pot and the bowl sitting in that. And then you can add the cream and the cold butter and your spices. And you're going to be heating it, so it will be hot over that water.
Which is what you're after is for something that is not smoking hot. You're after something that is warm to very warm.
Mm-hmm.
And has all of the fat and the spices and everything emulsified into it.
Right.
And then you have this luxurious sweet potato product.
Yeah.
You forgot to mention the booze you were going to put
right.
in.
Right. Gosling's Black Seal Rum, which I would add right at the very end. If you don't have an aversion to the alcohol, I would not flame it. I would just add it raw.
No, there's a little spice from having the alcohol, which is kind of cool with the spices.
Yeah, it's really good. Really yummy. Oh, and brown sugar. I like to add brown sugar and white sugar to it, as well as the butter, the cream, the cinnamon, and the rum. So that's the sweet potatoes. And I rarely do very much with sweet potatoes anymore. We make chips sometimes, thinly slice them and fry them, and they are really, really good. Sometimes we make them just a whole bunch of different types of root vegetable chips. Parsnips are, of course, unbelievably good fried. Or celeriac is good fried. White potato chips, sweet potatoes, blue potatoes, and maybe serve that with beef. Like if you're having a piece of braised beef, it might be nice to have something that's crispy, or even with pork, it's nice to have, or just have it as a snack, you know, and just a little bit of salt and pepper.
Really good beef. It strikes me really good beef with some kind of braised, but maybe almost with like barbecue spices or something with some of the sweet potatoes might be pretty fun to have with the big old dark beer as an autumnal, not brunch.
Well, and also, those sweet potatoes that I just talked about are so good with so many different things. It really can be. It can be with pork. It's really great with pork, but it stands up to lamb or venison. I've served those sweet potatoes with venison before, which is really nice with game to have that sort
it
of
sounds like, well, and,
rich, you know, because
to have
game
the rich
is so
with
lean.
The game. Yeah.
Yeah. And so really I do love it with venison and pork in particular. And you could certainly make sweet potato soup. And I almost tempted, just because it is the time of squash and pumpkins, to combine the things, because squash tends to have a high water content. And if you use something like a sweet potato or even a white potato to add starch to the soup, it will give your soup body and silkiness. So it might be fun to make one of your squash soups, whether it is pumpkin with a little bit of sweet potato in it. And again, the pumpkin loves all those sort of that whole spice profile, that flavor profile. So the flavors really go well together.
If you really want to cook pumpkins, though, you got to pay great attention to the choices that you make, because
that's for sure.
They're pumpkins that look cool on the outside that are not great to cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's people, the pumpkins with the big ribs, it seems like every pastry chef falls in love with the idea of, they call them fairy tale pumpkins, or
right.
Cinderella pumpkins, yeah. I've heard some of the farmers calling them.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, they have good density and they have good flavor, but it literally is density of the pumpkin that you're after. So, the size of it, the shape doesn't mean much. Sometimes the pumpkins that have like what looks like little peanuts growing on the outside, like last year, those are a lot of the best ones. They just had great density of flesh on the inside. When you roast that, then you're referring to the water content. When it's a really high water content, you just don't have that much flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to get a lot of flavor out of the pumpkin.
Right, and then you end up with this just, it's hard. Honestly, I find it a bit challenging to make a really good pumpkin, just pumpkin soup.
It
really does absolutely
so
depend.
Much of it is just
yeah.
The pumpkin.
What's that pumpkin that's really sort of dark and oddly shaped? That's the one.
Well, the rouge, to me.
Yeah, those are the ones that make
the
good soup.
The ones that's a very, very deep orange color.
Yeah.
That they almost like a sinister red orange.
Is that the only name they have, rouge?
Yeah. That's what they end up being called by the farmers
okay.
around here.
All right, okay.
Those usually are the best ones. A couple of years, it doesn't even look like a pumpkin. It's called a banana pumpkin.
Mm.
One year, Mario and I got one year that was like 90 pounds.
That
was
okay.
not
That's
that
a
big.
Lot of pumpkin.
It was not that big.
Okay.
It was incredibly dense. And we ended up cutting slices of it and smoking it on the wood grill, the slices a little bit, and then seasoning it, you know, salt and sugar and a little sweet sherry, and roasting in the oven overnight, real low and slow. Oh, my God. Just to make pumpkin dip out of it.
That sounds
good.
It was good.
Ridiculously good. But that's kind of the whole thing, is when a little bit like when you go shopping for a melon. It's like if it looks like it's going to be X heavy and it's X plus 5 when you pick it up, that's probably the one that you want.
You're on the right track.
Now, Sin, is there a pumpkin, barring not getting the right pumpkin, is there a pumpkin soup recipe that you have or you like the best? Or
I really think it needs to be very simple, because in the end, as we were talking about earlier, it's just about the purity of flavor and that it should taste like pumpkin. So quite frankly, I would just gently saute an onion and butter, small dice of onion and butter. Wouldn't allow it to get too much color. I'd probably add a tiny bit of shallots to it. And I would add the pumpkin meat I would roast the pumpkin. And obviously,
get some of the water out and get
right.
a little caramelization on it.
Right. So you've removed the seeds and everything, anything that's not desirable, the shell, obviously. And you have this beautiful pumpkin meat, and then add that to the pot. I would add chicken stock just to cover the pumpkin. And if you do want cream, add cream. If you don't want cream, add quite a bit more stock. And then I would add whatever spices I was interested in. I would not make it sweet at all. So it would be, I probably would add a little cinnamon.
It should be pretty naturally sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So a little bit of cinnamon and salt and pepper. And really, I wouldn't add anything else. That's what I would do. And then I would cook it until it was all tender and flavors had married, and puree it and strain it. And it should be delicious. And if you do a little buttery brioche crouton on top, or toasted walnuts, ground up walnuts on top, or pecans.
Sitting here thinking about cornbread croutons.
Yeah, or cornbread.
And sitting here thinking about the version of the pumpkin dip, the smoky pumpkin dip that we made years ago. Thinking about in that dip we had charred some jalapenos and some sweet peppers, and use that. Maybe using those in the soup if you want to take a different angle and give it a little tiny bit of heat.
That sounds good. That would be great. So lots you can do with that. And you could really make kind of a meal out of it. I think that's the other thing. It can be pretty hearty. Maybe you just have a salad with something like that.
Well, it could
be a salad with apples or pears, you know, all these this time of the year sort of flavors.
Or go ahead and make that cornbread.
And
forget the...
Or do skillet cornbread.
Exactly.
That would be fun to have skillet cornbread, and then you just, you know, cut it into pieces, and you've got this wonderful accompaniment. It could be a pretty simple supper.
So wait, what's the menu we're headed into now? So it's pumpkin soup, right? Lightly spiced pumpkin soup and skillet cornbread.
And we have a salad probably with apples and pears, or one or the other.
And so what I guess we're missing the chili or the...
I think game, you know, really do. You know, a lot of people are hunting this, you know, are coming up to hunting season in different parts of the country, and it's something we think about now.
It just feels like a casual meal, though. I know you're not a sandwich girl.
No.
But now I know. I was thinking, maybe like a bison burger or something along those lines.
Well, that would be fun to make.
With this menu, you know?
Sure.
See, at least as much as you love the West and the U.S., the idea of a bison burger, at least that might
appeal to
you.
That does appeal to me, actually. I would probably grind something with some fat into it, though. That's for sure, because bison is so lean. And
bison rhymes with bacon.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I think if I was making a bison burger, I would definitely grind some bacon into it. And all you need is salt and pepper. I mean, it could be very simple. And
put a fried green tomato on the bun.
And some grilled onions. And
toast that bun and butter.
Be pretty good. Yeah, bison burger. Sounds good.
Yeah. It all works out. And then we can watch football.
Right.
Or Downton Abbey, you know, whatever. Ooh, by the way, a thing about pumpkins, people always throw all the seeds away. They can be amazing.
Yes.
Depending upon the pumpkins and squash, they can be amazing if you just clean them up and dry them out a little bit in your oven. Just get the initial water off of them. Then season them and go back in your oven with them, and you make just a fantastic snack with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an easy, you know, take salt and mix it with a little bit of whatever spice you might like, or salt and a little bit of sugar.
Yeah, or cayenne.
And cayenne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or pimenton.
Yeah, that would be good.
You know, the smoked paprika.
Yeah. So with pumpkin soup and skillet cornbread and maybe that salad with some apples and pears or...
Don't skip over the bison burger.
The bison bacon
burger sounds pretty darn good.
Bison bacon burger. What are we drinking with that?
I might need some pickled jalapenos for that, too, by the way.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to get your attention, you know. But the pickled jalapenos turns it into a beer meal. There's so many good, rich local beers being made right now. That's an easy, if you want to do that kind of thing. If you want wine for that sort of a meal, a big red Zinfandel, or honestly... You spend less money on it, and you get a lot of the same flavors out of really good wines from the south of Italy, from grapes like Negromaro and Primitivo in particular. And there's a wine to look for from Sicily, Cerasuolo. And that's one that is Primitivo and Frappato blended together, 60-40 usually. And the Primitivo in Sicily is gigantic and almost... super unctuous and spicy and roasted. And Frappato is a thinner-skinned red grape. It's almost like a bright strawberry jam sort of a character to it, and not that tannic. And that is super delicious. I can imagine being a little kid and getting a taste of that and thinking, this is perfect for me. You know, well, I'm a little kid who's a lot older than that and still perfect for me. And I think with a meal like that, I would drink that in a heartbeat. It's hard to...
Any Zinfandel in particular in years?
Oh, Robert Bialy is a pretty darn good producer. I think my struggle with... And Zin, well, first and foremost, if you're one of those people that needs great big red wines from Napa, 2012, 2013, those are your years, for goodness sake. If you want to drink Cab, that's jump all over those, because there's the crops are not big, and the prices are relatively big, honestly, for what's in the bottle. But the general quality is higher in two vintages than I've really ever seen in one shot. At least you're getting real quality push for whatever price point you're hitting in those years.
Okay.
It is hard. I mean, it remains hard for California to deliver quality for a really easy price. Maybe McManus from further up north, their Zin, or their Petit Sirah. Those are really, really good for the price. It's just really hard to think about. You're watching a game, and you have friends for cornbread, and your Jazzy Bison burgers, and your pumpkin soup to start that you serve in a mug or something like that, and you had to spend $80 on a bottle of.
So we go to Italy.
Zinfandel, yeah, that's okay. I mean, and with the euro where it is,
right,
it makes a difference. Or you find sort of alternative sources within the West Coast stuff, like that producer McManus, whose values have been really good for a while. So if I'm not drinking that, and I'm not drinking the beer, you could probably get away with, and people have an awful lot of interest in spirits, you could probably get away with a very high quality Manhattan and not be unhappy with yourself, to be frank.
Okay.
Anyway, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we'll do one more segment of autumn food recipes, menus, beverages, all of that and more on WIPR. We'll be right back.